This is HPR episode 2526 entitled GNU Orc, Part 10, and is part of the series Learning Orc. It is hosted by Dave Morris and is about 42 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is more about a race in GNU Orc.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello everybody, this is Dave Morris. Welcome to Hacker Public Radio. Today I'm going to talk about Orc, GNU Orc. This is show number 10 in the series, which BeEasy and myself have been producing. This episode, I want to talk more about use of arrays in Orc, because arrays are pretty cool and important to understand. I also want to talk about some real-world examples of the use of Orc. I mean, so far we've been looking at trivial examples that demonstrate the point, but they're not really related to how you'd really use it. So I really wanted to see if I could add a few of these from time to time, just so you can see how it can be used. So let's just quickly recap the whole array business. We know that arrays in Orc are associative. That is, the index used to refer to an element is a string. The contents as well can be a string or a number or whatever. Or it can indeed be nothing. So you can have empty array elements, which I guess you would regard as containing empty strings. Remember that an associative array is also called a hash. You might see the same term used in other contexts. The array index, thing you use to index a specific element, is also referred to as a subscript. I guess that's more mathematical. We know that array elements are referred to by the name of the array and then the index expression in square brackets. So, for example, if you had an array called fruit and there was an element indexed by apple, you would type fruit, lowercase is, and then in square brackets the string apple. Remember, a string in Orc is enclosed in double quotes. So that means the element of the array fruit, which is indexed by the string apple. Now the index value is actually an expression, so it can be of any level of complexity. So I've got a little example in the notes. Two variables, ind1 and ind2. First one is set to the string app. The second one is set to the string le. Then if you did print fruit square bracket ind1, then a space ind2, close square brackets. The two strings are concatenated. You just have to put string variables next to one another and they get concatenated. They make the string apple. So it would index and print the contents. We saw earlier as well in the series that you can check to see whether an array element exists by asking whether the index exists. So the expression is index, whatever that happens to be, whether it's a constant or a variable, in, the word in, and then the name of the array. So, for example, you might type if, open parentheses, and then in double quotes, apple, that's a string, constant string, space in, space fruit, close parentheses, and then the thing that depends on that if would be print fruit with an index of apple, perhaps. You might say yes, it exists, or whatever. You also remember that looping through the elements of array is achieved with a special version of the for statement, where you type for space, open parentheses, ind, whatever the index name is, in fruit, for example. So it's another case of the ind, of the in expression. So ind in fruit, close parentheses, and then you could do print fruit square bracket ind, where ind is a variable name, which is being given successive values of the indexes. Now, the order in which you get these is arbitrary. I think it's constant every time you run it for a given orc. But if you run orc on one machine and then on another, particularly if they're different versions of Linux or Unix and stuff, then there's no guarantee that you're going to get the same thing. There's no guarantee, full stop, that you're going to get these things in order. We'll look at this in another episode, because GNU Orc gives you better capabilities in this area, but that's not a thing for today. So quite often you might want to use a number as the index of an array. Remember, the subscripts are always string in Orc. If you typed a number as an index, then it will be automatically converted into a string. So if you type something like the array name data, square brackets 42, close square brackets, equals some number. I quite like 83886 07, which is 2 to the 23 minus 1. I used to work on 24-bit machines years ago, and somehow that number stuck in my head. So the integer number 42, in this case, is converted to the string 42. Surprise, surprise. And it just works. You could either type it with quotes around it or not. But Orc can handle other number bases. So it will handle octal. So it's the standard Unix convention, which personally I've never fully understood, but where a leading zero denotes that the number is an octal number. So if you typed data square brackets 052, then it means the same as data square brackets 42, because decimal 42 is octal 52, or 52 would be a better way of saying it. So that could be confusing. You need to be careful about that, which is why I'm telling you this, so you don't accidentally trip over things. You can also type hexadecimal numbers. So data, array data, square brackets 0x2a, doesn't matter what case, but I've used uppercase for the A. That is the hexadecimal equivalent of 42. So you would get the same element. Now, the way in which numbers are converted into strings in Orc is important to understand. There is a built-in variable called convfmt, C-O-N-V-F-M-T, all in uppercase, and it defines the conversion for floating point numbers. Integers just exist as they are. Behind the scenes, there's a function which is called sprintf, which is used to convert numbers into strings. Sprintf is like printf, surprisingly, but instead of printing anything, it converts a number into a string using a formatting specification. You'll remember we saw printf in episode 9. So by default, this, I'm going to call it conv format, is the string. The format is the string %.6g. And what this means is numbers are to be printed using the G format, which means, if you look at the manual, print a number in either scientific notation or in floating point notation, whichever uses fewer characters. So that's fun. The number 6 here aims to format the number in a width of 6 character, well, 6 digits plus the decimal point. You can change the setting of this conformat thing in your own script if you wish, so you can change the way this behaves. And we'll come on to this in a moment. So knowing that this is what's happening, I've got a little example script, which a whole script you could type on the command line, where there's a begin rule, and in it a variable called x is set to the expression 100 divided by 3, and then that variable is used to index an array called data, and we set data square brackets x to a value. I don't know what made me think of custard when I was typing this, but that's what I did. Then we print x, and then we print the contents of data square bracket x. So what we get from dividing 100 by 3 is 33.3333. So that's 7 characters long, and we get the string custard from that print statement. So What that means is the index to the data array is the string 33.3333. Things get more weird if you change that example, and instead of dividing 100 by 3, you divide, what would that be? 1,000 million? What is that called? Does that have a special name? I can't remember. But it's one with 9 zeros after it. Divide that by 3. I chose 3 because it produces a number full of 3s. Set data x to some value, and then do the same again. Print x and print the contents of the array variable indexed by x. Well, what we get for x is 3.333333e plus 08. So that's scientific notation, which means 3.333 times 10 to the 8. So that's a pretty weird index to an array. It works fine, but it is rather weird. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if you're in the habit of fiddling around with this format spec, conv FMT, then if it's set to one thing when you store something and it's set to something else when you retrieve it, you're going to have problems retrieving it, or could have. So being aware of that is important, I think. So, next thing then, what about if the variable you're using as a subscript is not initialized? Remember, an uninitialized variable in awk, when you treat it as a number, it's regarded as being zero. But if you're treating it as a string, then it's regarded as being the null string, an empty string. So I've made a little example, which is downloadable from the show, which I've also listed in the notes, the long notes, that is. What this does, it slurps some data from standard in into an array, and then it prints it back out again. The thing that's running the script, I made this an executable script, by the way, so it starts with hash bang user bin awk minus f. We've seen that before. I'm just echoing a string into it so it can work on it. But I actually wanted to give it 3 lines, so I used echo hyphen e and then a string of capital A, new line, capital B, new line, capital C. And the hyphen E format of echo lets you put these escape sequences in there, so I've used backslash N. So I'm echoing that into this particular script that's being invoked. Now, as the script reads stuff, it reads using, it stores, I should say, using a variable L into an array called A. I wasn't very original with names, but just saved some typing. So A square bracket L equals $0 is the first line of the main rule. Now L will be uninitialized the first time it's used. So L is going to be converted to a string, and since it's not being treated as a number, it will produce a null string. That's a perfectly valid array index. Then the next line is L++, so L is incremented. So now it takes a numeric value, and in that context, it will be set to 1, because the thing that's computing the addition will treat its uninitialized state as 0, and will add 1 to it. And the third line is a print statement, which prints out NR. Remember, NR is the built-in variable that counts the number of records that your awk script is reading. Print that out, followed by a space, followed by the contents of that line. So you'll see in the example that I was mentioning earlier that you see lines 1, 2, and 3, and the contents are A, B, and C. Now the end rule for this little script consists of a print statement, where it prints numeric subscripts. And then it uses a for loop where I is set to, I is the control variable of the for loop. It's set to L, which will be the maximum number that was counted as the main rule was looping, minus 1, because it will have been added to after the last line was read, and it's counting backwards to 0. So it prints out the value of I, a colon, a space, and the contents of the array A with the index I. So when you look at what that produces, it produces, under the title numeric subscripts, 2 contains C, that's element 2 contains C, element 1 contains B, element 0 contains nothing. We can't see A. A's vanished. I think you're already ahead of me, probably, and you understand why. Then, in the end rule, there's another bit of code which consists of a print statement, say, which reports actual subscripts. And that's followed by another for loop using the index in array format. So it's for space open parenthesis I in A close parenthesis. Then the thing that depends on that is print I, contents of I, and the colon and a space, and then A square brackets I. So when that's run, that's going to walk through all of the subscripts of this array. The first thing we see is a line which consists simply of a colon, a space, and the letter A. So in other words, the first subscript, the first index that we get back, is a null string, and that's the element that contains the value A that was read in. Then we get 0 colon, followed by nothing. Then we get 1 colon B, 2 colon C. Why did we have an element 0? Well, the previous loop, when it was looking for it, the process of looking actually created it and created it empty. So there's a lot of potential confusion here, which is why I'm going to this explanation. This is also covered in the GNU-Orc manual. Now, the two lines that consist of A square brackets L equals $0 followed by L plus plus, if that had been replaced by A square brackets L plus plus close square brackets equals $0, we wouldn't have had this problem. And that's because L is uninitialized, but L plus plus means return the current value of L and then increment it. So it's a post-increment, it's called. And because this is being done in an arithmetic context, it forces the first value returned to be 0, and then it increments it to 1. So you would find that the letter capital A would have been stored in element 0, B in 1, C in 2, as would have been intended, as opposed to what we got in the previous example, where things got a little bit confusing. Okay, another couple of things about arrays. First of all, you can delete array elements. There's actually a statement, delete, which is followed by the name of the array, and then in square brackets, an index. So you're deleting an individual element of an array. You could have tidied up the messy example before by simply typing delete space A square bracket 0. It would have got rid of the empty element, should you have wished to. You can also delete an entire array with the statement delete and then the name of the array. The array doesn't vanish, it just becomes empty. So that name is still declared, defined in your script. So if you then went and tried to make a simple variable, an ordinary variable, a scalar variable, so your array was called A, and you typed A equals 42, then your script would fail with an error message because A already exists as an empty array. The other thing I thought would be useful to know about this stage was the ability to take a string and chop it up and put the bits in an array. I haven't got an example of this being done, but we'll come up with one in a future episode when I talk a bit more about this, I think. There are actually two functions in Orc which can generate arrays from strings by chopping. The functions are called split and pat split. We're going to just look at split in this episode, and we'll come back and look at arrays later in a further episode. So the general format of the split function is split, that's the name of the function, open parentheses, then there's a string, comma, and then the name of an array. By the way, the string can be a constant string, a thing in quotes, or it can be the name of a variable holding a string. array is the name of an array. And then optionally after that will be a field that's referred to as field sep, so comma field sep. So that's the name of, that is a regular expression that's used as the thing that is to be used for chopping the string up. And then there's a further optional argument which is denoted as seps, S-E-P-S. So it's another array which is to hold the separators that are found as split, is chopping the array up. Now the seps bit, the fourth argument, is a GNU awk extension. Other awk versions will not have it. So when this splitting is done, successive pieces are placed in the nominated array in elements 1, 2 and so forth. It's important to be aware that the array is emptied before the splitting begins. So you can't use split to add to an array. If you give the name of the array, it's always initialized to empty and then is filled up. If you don't provide the separator, then the built-in variable fs is used. We've talked a lot about the field separator variable. So it's doing something very similar to what awk does all by itself when reading data from a file or from standard in. If you provide it, it's a regular expression, which fs is as well, and it can be a regular expression constant, or it can be a variable containing a regular expression. There's an example coming up in a moment. The way that the separators are stored is interesting. If you use a field separator of a single space, then split takes any leading spaces and puts them into the separators array element 0, and any trailing white space on the line is put into separator array n, where n is the number of elements in the array which is capturing the chopped up bits. When split is run, it returns the number of pieces placed in the array. So it's quite a powerful thing. It's why I thought it was worth talking about it here. So I've provided a simple example, which again you can download it, and it's an executable script. What this one does, it's a pretty simple one. You've seen this sort of thing before. It will be fed a series of lines, and it will simply put each line into an array. So the main rule is something which consists of one statement. An array is called, the array that we're using is called lines, and we're using nr as the index. So lines, square brackets, nr, capital NR. You remember nr is the record number of the current record, and we set that to $0. So the array gets filled up with the lines that are presented to the script. Then the end rule consists of a loop within a loop. So the first loop is an array scanning loop, which is for space open parenthesis I in lines close parenthesis, and then an open curly brace, because the body of this loop is going to be multi-line. So we've got the line in, we're going to split it, and the split statement says split. Now the thing we're going to split is lines square brackets I. So the current record, the current element that we're looking at in the array, which is one of the lines that came in the first instance. And we're going to store it in an array called fields, which I've done with no vowels, FLDS. And then that's followed by a regular expression constant, which is one of those things enclosed in slashes. And I've got space asterisk comma space asterisk. So what that means is a comma with any number of spaces before it and after it is the separator. We have another argument which is comma seps. I've got an array there which I called seps with no originality at all, into which the separators are going to be put. And then we close the parenthesis. So at that point in the loop, we've got the line, we've chopped it up, and it's in this array called FLDS. So the next thing is another loop, and this one is for open parenthesis J in FLDS close parenthesis. This one's just got the one line depending on it. So that line consists of a printf, and the format for the printf is a string which contains a %s with a vertical bar either side of it. That's just to demonstrate that there are no spaces before or after the thing. Then there's a space, and then in parentheses, still in the format thing here, we've got another %s. So there are two strings to be printed out, one with vertical bars either side and one with parentheses around it. Backslash n for a new line, because you need that in printf, comma FLDS square brackets J, close square bracket. So that prints out the currently indexed element of the FLDS array. Seps is also printed out. That's the second string, and that's also indexed by J. I'm not indexing the zeroth element in this case because, well, that's probably going a bit too far. So there's an example here of what happens when it's run. We have an echo minus E, hyphen E, I should say, and we're doing another ABC thing. So we're using this echo hyphen E thing that lets you put new lines in a string. We've got A comma B comma C, no spaces, backslash N, D comma, lots of spaces, E, lots of spaces, comma, F, close the string. And then that's fed into this script. I'm not reading the names of these scripts out because they're not really very meaningful. They're just there as a handle for you to download if you're so interested. So what you see is we've just got the letters A to F, and they are printed one per line, with no spaces around them because we were using spaces as part of the delimiter. The first one's separator is a simple comma, the second is a simple comma, the third one, because it's just before a new line, there's no separator at all. Then for the D, we've got a comma and a bunch of spaces. For the E, we've got a bunch of spaces and a comma. And then for the F, we have no separator because that's the new line at the end of the string. So hopefully you can see what split has done and the potential uses of split from that. So, okay, I'm leaving the array stuff alone for the moment then. So I'm going to make this episode a bit longer than some of the previous ones, though we have been as long as 40 minutes in this series. But I wanted to talk about a couple of real world examples using awk. These aren't specifically about arrays. It's just some uses for awk and why you should use it yourself. So the first one is scanning a log file. I have a script that I wrote, not in awk, which adds tags and summaries to HPRS episodes that don't have any. I mention this whole project every month on the community news show, probably boring everybody to death with it, but still. The script gets its updates as email messages, and as it processes them, it keeps a log, and I've put an example of a couple of lines from the log in the notes here. Each log line begins with the date, followed by the time, and these are dates and times for on the server, which is in California. It's followed by a message in square brackets, which is the type of record in the log, the relative importance, and then some stuff, some text, relating to the event that is being logged. One of these is the show that's been worked on and whether tags and or summary has been added. So what I wanted to do was to report on the number of tags and summaries that have been processed in the previous month when I do the notes for the community news show. So what I want to do is to scan the log file for the total for the month. Now when I first did this I used a pipeline with grep and WC and stuff in it. But this is a really good case for using awk. So my solution, which I've listed here, it's only 12 lines long, and it's not only an awk script, it's something you could put into a bash script or type on the command line if you were mad enough to do it. I have been, but I'm not anymore. But just as I was developing, it's useful to do it. So I wanted to just quickly go through it. It consists of three rules. There's a begin rule, which is there's numbers on this stuff, so I can refer to them. So it's lines 2 to 5, and what happens in the begin rule is that a variable called re is filled with an irregular expression. The regular expression starts with a circumflex, which is the anchor for the start of the line, which I'm sure you'll remember from many discussions of regular expressions. This is then followed by piece of the date, and the date is generated dynamically using a built-in awk function called strf time, strift time. Not sure it's meant to be pronounced, but there you go. I won't go into details about how it does it. I think we should cover this in a little bit more detail later, this particular function. But I'm generating the current year as a four-digit thing, a slash, the current month as a two-digit thing, and then a slash. So that means we're looking only for records which begin with the year and month that we're interested in. So this is then followed by two dots, a space, any number, the two dots being two arbitrary characters which match the day part of the date, then any number of any characters followed by a space, and then 1 to 4 numbers and a colon. So the, as I said, the two dots match the date part of the day part of the date. The dot asterisk covers the time. I'm not interested in the time. And it also covers the square bracket info, or whatever it is. Then we're looking for the line after that. It has to have a number in it, which would be the show number, followed by a colon. We're not interested in anything else. The regular expression is actually a string concatenation. There are three strings there. The other thing in the begin rule is that a variable called count is initialized to 0. That's just me being a good programmer, I guess. I just feel more comfortable at initializing it. So the main rule is simply comparing using $0 tilde re, the variable re, is comparing each line with the regular expression. And if found, if it matches, I should say, then it prints it out. And it prints it out with a number preceding it, which is the current contents of the count variable followed by the line itself. Count is one of the arguments to printf, as is $0, but count is preceded by two pluses, which means pre-increment it. So count starts at 0, so the first time it's printed it'll produce a 1. And the format statement for it, the format specification, is %02d. So we'll get a two-digit number with leading zeros. Okay, I won't go into any more detail there. The end rule consists of one statement, print the string additions, followed by the contents of the variable count, which will have counted the number of lines that match. So I show some sample output for February 2018, where all of the various additions are listed and the number is 23. That actually turned out to be, I think, 25 in the end. But this was done at some point during the month. As I say, it'd be better to put all that stuff in a bash script. Probably the easiest thing. You could put it in an awk script as well. Either way would do. Maybe we'll do that, actually. But the point is, it's just doing some fancy matching in a file. And awk's very good at doing those sorts of things. Okay, second example. It's a bit more complex. It's a fairly simple script, but the preamble is necessary, so we don't lose you doing that. So what I'm trying to do is to parse a tab-delimited file with columns in it. So I currently look after the process of uploading HPR episodes to the Internet Archive, and I use a Python library to do this, and the library's called Internet Archive, and one of the tools that comes with it is a command line tool that uses the library, and it's called IA, which is short for Internet Archive. The IA tool lets me interrogate the archive, get data about existing shows, and lets me upload stuff and delete stuff and change stuff and whatever. So it's an excellent generic tool for doing all this stuff. Now, in some cases, I've found it necessary to replace the audio formats on the Internet Archive with copies that have been generated on the HPR system. And that's because we want to ensure these audio files contain metadata, audio tags that you'd see in your podcatcher or whatever. And these files are created by the Internet Archive software by default. So you just need to upload one file, ideally a WAV file, which we do, we have been doing, and the archive.org software, the Internet Archive software, does a process they refer to as derivation and creates a whole list of other formats. But in doing so, it does not propagate the metadata. Since we're now pointing our podcast feeds at the Internet Archive, the fact that they contain no metadata is causing some problems for people. So we've been making versions which do contain DAGs and uploading them. So I need to be able to tell which HPR episodes have got the tagless derived audio and which have got audio that we've generated. The IA tool can do this, but it does it in a format that's hard to parse, so I wrote an awk script to help me. What the IA tool produces is tab delimited lines. First line contains the names of all of the columns, so it's like a sort of spreadsheet type of layout. Not very readable for humans, but fine for computers. You could put it in a spreadsheet probably, but that would be a pain. The way it's formatted, and I don't really understand why, is that sometimes certain columns are missing or they're in different orders. So you can't say, give me column 1 and column 6, because column 1 is fairly constant, but column 6 varies. So you get different data out depending on which show on Internet Archive you're looking at. So I wrote a script to try and overcome this. The script is called parseiaaudio.org, and it's an executable awk script. I've listed it in the notes here. It's not particularly long, but it's got a fair number of comments in. I need comments in my scripts because I come back to them later and I'm like, what the hell is this? So I've left them in for your edification. So there's a begin rule in this script, and it simply sets FS, the field separator, to the tab character, backslash T. And there are two other rules. The first one only runs when the first record is encountered. So it's checking for NR, the record number being 1. And this is the header line. There is, in these notes, a snapshot, first three lines of one of these files for show 2450, and you'll see it's got a bunch of titles separated by column titles separated by tabs. So that's the one we're reading. We have a for loop which uses a variable, numeric variable I, to iterate from 1 to the number of fields. Remember, NF, capital NF, is number of fields variable. And for each instance, it stores in an array called FLD some values. The index to FLD is $i. Now, you'll remember, we have covered this before, I will be a number from 1 to whatever the number of fields is. If you put a dollar in front of the variable, it means take that number and treat the whole thing as if you're referring to a field. Remember, the fields are called $1, $2, $3. So the first time we're using $1, the next time around the loop, $2. Each of these fields will contain one of the names that we saw. So the first one is actually the word name. So we will be storing that. And what we're storing is the value of the counter. So in the notes, I've got a list of the sort of stuff that would be stored in this array based upon the example in the notes. So FLD index by name is set to 1, FLD SHA1 is set to 2, FLD format is set to 3, and so on. So the second rule is invoked if two conditions are met. First condition is the record number is greater than 1. We've already dealt with the first line anyway, so that's pretty obvious. The second test is a bit more weird. What it says is the field whose number is whatever the header name returned, 1, field 1 it will be in the example, and the name in there, the string that you get out of there, should end with, this is a regular expression match, either any of the strings FLAC, MP3, OGG, Opus, SPX, and WAV. I'm looking only for the audio file. There are a whole bunch of other files associated with the show on the Internet Archive, but I'm only interested in the audio file. So it's just looking for those based on the extension. If we match both of these conditions, we print out a couple of fields from that line. The way we do it is we use the FLD array to get the particular fields. So FLD, you remember, contains indexes, which are the titles and that first header line. I'm interested in the field which is called name in the header and the field called source. I just want them printed out and I want them formatted in a particular way, and you see there's a printf that does that. Prints out two strings in one. The first one is 15 characters long, and the second one, don't care, a new line. So what is all this stuff here? This dollar parentheses FLD square brackets quote name close square bracket close parentheses. What that means is use the value stored in the array FLD square brackets name, which in the example was 1, and use that to reference a field. So the thing I just mentioned, the thing in parentheses, would resolve to dollar parentheses 1. And that's just a way of writing dollar 1. So just print out dollar 1 from the input line. We have to put parentheses around this because we're using an array inside the parentheses. And if we simply stuck the dollar on the front of FLD, awk would be confused about what was meant. So what the script is doing is printing specific columns for certain lines, so selecting particular lines is selecting particular columns, but we don't know exactly which columns we want. We just know what the name is. So we're simply using the field names to get the columns that we want. Yeah. Hopefully I've made sense of that. It's actually a really simple concept, but the way it's done is I think probably the only way it could be done. If you think otherwise, then come back with some suggestions. But it deals with it. It deals with this problem. I should say that most of the queries that you send to the Internet Archive interface returns JSON formatted result. JSON's a whole other ball game. It's not something that awk can easily parse. Probably could, but would be such a pain to do. For some reason, this one returns a tab delimited file, and it varies where all the fields are. But awk was well able to deal with. So, I hope that was useful and helpful, and possibly even interesting. And that's all I'm gonna say about this one. That's it, really. All right then. Bye bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.